At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Axis Mundi.
Welcome to One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew L. Seidel, a constitutional attorney and the author of The Founding Myth and American Crusade. This is a podcast about religion, the law, and the battle for America's soul. We'll be separating church and state, defending freedom and equality, and fighting Christian nationalism. If you haven't already, sign up for our weekly bonus content and ad-free listening at accessmundi.us. LFG, folks. Anti-vaxxing is anti-American. We're going to get into it, but let's take a trip back to Christmas of 1776. The cold weather is ripping through the Continental Army, the army that George Washington, the general, the father of our country, is preparing to lead across the icy Delaware River. These are the times that try men's souls. Washington orders that the American Crisis, a pamphlet by the brilliant Thomas Paine, is to be read aloud to the mustering troops. And those words echo down the ranks and in the men's hearts. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands by it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us. The harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. What we obtain too cheap, we esteem too lightly. It is dearness only that gives everything its value. That's how the American crisis begins, and those are the words that the soldiers heard on that cold Christmas night as they're getting ready to cross the icy Delaware. And we all know this famous story. We all learned it in school. George Washington leads the Continental Army on this daring night raid across the Delaware River on Christmas night, 1776. What follows, we don't remember as well. Immediately after were the first and second battles of Trenton and the Battle of Princeton. All American victories. I can't say that often about this particular war. Really, Washington's strategy was less to win battles than to stay alive and keep the army alive and able to engage in the fight. We're really talking about Fabian tactics or Fabian strategy, named after a Roman general, Fabius, who tangled with Hannibal, working to stretch Hannibal's supply lines, and basically avoiding any kind of outright pitched battle that could be decisive win or decisive loss. We're talking about a war of attrition. Because Washington knew that Continental Army, though patriotic, was no match for the professional, well-trained British Army. He had to keep his soldiers alive. He had to keep the army alive. That was the main thing. That was the main tactic. So after those battles, after that daring raid, In January 1777, while encamped at Morristown, New Jersey, a place that has a fascinating history, which I may get into sometime for personal reasons. In 1777, at Morristown, George Washington did something altogether revolutionary. He ordered the first army-wide immunization in military history, in human history. He ordered his troops to be inoculated against smallpox. Should that disorder infect the army in a natural way and rage with its usual virulence, we should have more to dread from it than from the sword of the enemy. Now, some other armies had done various immunizations, but this was the first ever mandatory army-wide, force-wide policy, and it had a tremendous impact. The mortality rates among infected soldiers dropped from more than 30% to below 1%. It is no lie to say that this policy saved the Continental Army, that without the mandatory vaccinations that Washington ordered, America would not exist right now. Vaccines saved the Revolutionary War for the American cause, for the cause of independence. Vaccines are as American as it gets. And yet, we have a government, a MAGA government, a Christian nationalist government, that has effectively decapitated the Center for Disease Control and removed anybody with any expertise in ensuring that we have a robust vaccination program for everybody in this country, not just for the military, but for all of us. And I'm sure you've by now heard and are as well informed as I am about what happened at the CDC and what RFK and Trump have done to essentially ensure that the next pandemic that hits, and there will be another one, that we will not be able to respond the way that we did in the past. And it's crazy because this is like the one thing that Trump did kind of right in the first go-round. Operation Warp Speed. They pushed and put extra resources behind trying to get these vaccines out. And now they have just completely eviscerated our ability to do anything like that again. And so you've heard about all that, but I want to touch on another story that may be a little bit more under the radar, which is the Washington Post headline reads, RFK Jr. endorses push for religious exemptions to school vaccine mandates. And the way the story tells it is, and you can see this in the show notes, basically right now West Virginia is one of five states that has only medical exemptions for vaccine mandates for public schools, right? You want to put your kid in public school, you have to put your kid in school, right? Maybe not in public school, but if you're putting them in the public school, they have to have certain vaccines because there's a lot of people that go there, and we don't want infectious diseases ripping through public school classrooms and killing children. This is a pretty reasonable policy. It's the correct policy. It's the way it should be. We should not be allowing any type of exemption other than medical exemptions for vaccines. Necessary medical exemptions, yes. Anything else, no. Sorry. We should all be getting our shots, especially because there are some people who are medically compromised and legitimately cannot get vaccines for medical reasons, right? Their immune systems may not work the way they're supposed to. They may be immunocompromised. Their immune systems may not be able to take a vaccine, which is, you know, well, to oversimplify, a weakened version of a virus that it can beat down, your immune system can beat down and kill and then know how to deal with a real version if it were to come along. People with certain allergies may not be able to get vaccines. And what RFK and Trump are saying is you states have to offer religious exemptions to these vaccinations. And of course, this is Christian nationalism infecting our public policy once again. And one of the things that is interesting about this is that religion really has nothing to say at all about vaccines. Nothing at all. And with Christian nationalism, one of the things that becomes difficult is it becomes hard to disentangle the political from the religious, because Christian nationalists believe each fervently, and there's sort of this feedback loop of, well, did this really start off as a political belief, or did this really start off as a religious belief? Which one is the driving force in the Christian nationalist movement? Is it that religious strand, or is it that political strand? Either way, they're willing to slap a label on it and to claim religious freedom, especially in court. And we actually saw this happen in real time with vaccines and with masks as the pandemic wore on. And I have a whole other book written about this. My publisher has told me that nobody wants to read about the pandemic and that books about the pandemic don't sell. And I have a friend who edited a volume of essays on the pandemic, and she has echoed to me the truth of that rule. So, Jesus Christ Super Spreader, which was my working title for this document, this book, which has 60,000 words, will have to wait for another day. But no major religion objected to COVID vaccines. Now, there was a sharp increase in people claiming religious exemptions from those required vaccines. Again, these are exemptions that should not exist. But it kind of, that sharp increase sort of shows the after-the-fact nature of these religious justifications for this behavior, for this desire to be exempt, for this desire to advance a political belief, right? It's this post hoc religious justification for a political movement, because no new biblical scroll about vaccines was discovered. There was no new divine revelation handed down from heaven or from Jesus or from a throne in the sky. I pointed this out in American Crusade. People opposed life-saving medical science for political reasons, but there was no political exemption for vaccines. So instead, they used the magic word, God, religious freedom. And this happened with masks as well. There, I talk about in American Crusade, I talk about how the Louisiana Attorney General, Jeff Landry, distributed form letters that read, quote, "I do not consent to forcing a face covering on my child who is created in the image of God. Masks interfere with religious commands to share God's love with others and interfere with relationships in contravention of the Bible." I quote a father who refused to let his kids wear masks in school because the Bible says we're made in the image of God and Satan tries to cover that up. I mean, the same would be said of clothes, one would think.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
An Ohio lawmaker said, "This is the greatest nation on earth, founded on Judeo-Christian principles," which made me bang my head against the wall constantly. And then he continued, "One of those principles is that we are all created in the image and likeness of God. That image is seen the most by our face. I will not wear a mask. That's the image of God right there." I mean, talk about arrogant. I have the face of God, so I can't cover it up with a mask. Get fucked, man. Pastor Greg Locke, who burned the founding myth with a blowtorch, which did wonders for book sales, banned masks in his churches. But again, look, there's no theology or reality to back up any of that. And that should matter in the context of religious freedom, because they're claiming this religious idea. And you can see the ad hoc rationalization for this. You can see how bad this is. I'm made in the image of God, so I can't wear a mask. But as always, even if we accepted those as true, your religion is not a license to violate the rights of others. Religious freedom is not a license to harm others. And that includes by spreading lethal viruses. And this was the case law until the Supreme Court got involved in the pandemic. And when I say the Supreme Court, I mean the Supreme Court with Amy Coney Barrett on it, because she's the change in personnel changed the law here. But in 1905, the Supreme Court actually upheld mandatory vaccines. It said that real liberty for all could not exist if someone was allowed to act, quote, regardless of the injury that may be done to others. Right? You don't get to recklessly risk everybody else's life just because your God says that he made your face in his image and therefore you can't wear a little piece of cloth that helps filter out some of the particles that you breathe out. In 1944, the court explained, quote, the right to practice freely, excuse me. In 1944, the court said, quote, the right to practice religion freely does not include liberty to expose the community or the child to communicable disease or the latter to ill health or death. That is pretty damn clear. That's Prince versus Massachusetts, if you want to go look it up. One federal judge summed it up a little bit later, quite nicely, by saying, the Constitution is not a suicide pact. The First Amendment may not be used to make it one. You do not get to claim religious freedom as a way to risk everybody else's health and safety. Or at least you shouldn't. But the Supreme Court has changed all that again. See American Crusade for more and for a lot of what I just explained here. And what the worm in RFK Jr.'s brain and Donald Trump want to do is build on that infectious momentum at the Supreme Court. They are working to force those states and those public schools to require religious exemptions. It's gross. It's disheartening. It's wrong. It's un-American. And it runs counter to one of the great moments in the founding of this country. Whenever I think about vaccines, I think about something that Melinda Gates said in 2015. She was actually on HuffPost Live, but she was talking about her charitable work, her philanthropy. And she said, we take vaccines for granted in the United States. And she went on to explain that women in the developing world know the power of vaccines. They will walk 10 kilometers in the heat with their child to line up to get a vaccine because they have seen death. Gates added that Americans have simply, quote, forgotten what measles death looks like. And we are going to start seeing the reality of measles death. And I think we should see the reality of that. I think media ought to lift up the awful tragedies that we are going to see about children dying from these preventable diseases. And we do take these vaccines for granted. And the fact that we don't see the impact. We're victims of our own success. And because we don't see the impact, it takes away the biggest motivator for vaccines. It removes all the weight from that one side of the scale. And for the people who are struggling to explain why their child is different, when you have suffered one of the rare complications for vaccines, it makes their voice stand out more. Religious exemptions should not exist for any vaccines. And in fact, this was a given. Justice Antonin Scalia, who is just the scion of conservative judges, right? He wrote the majority opinion in a case called Employment Division v. Smith, which involves religion, but everybody misdescribes this case. And one of these days, I'm going to have to do a deep dive on it for the podcast and explain how everybody gets this case wrong. But until then, you can read American Crusade. In that case, in that majority opinion, that Scalia himself, this conservative titan, who every conservative judge says, I'm a judge like Justice Scalia was. I'm in the mold of Justice Scalia. He reiterated that there cannot be a right for religion to be exempt from any law that conflicts with the religion. You don't just get a get out of law free card because you're a believer in something. And he noted that this was particularly true when the laws were broad and neutral and generally applicable. In other words, when the laws don't target religious worship, as in, for instance, a case banning Muslims from coming into the country, or the Santeria case that I talk about with the city of Hialeah in down near Miami, which I talk about in American Crusade, right? Traffic laws apply to everybody, even to the people who want to let Jesus take the wheel, because those traffic laws don't target solely religious believers. So everybody has to follow those laws. Doesn't matter if your God is a backseat driver. You still have to obey the law. And Scalia explains in his opinion, he uses the analogy of taxes and the freedom of the press, this other First Amendment, right? He says, look, taxes don't prohibit the free exercise of religions. Even if you believe that supporting the government is sinful, tough, you got to pay taxes. Any more than having to pay taxes on, you know, buying a book, or even buying a Bible, or abridging the freedom of the press. It simply cannot be the case that religion is automatically exempted from civil law and civil rules, like vaccine exemptions, and that is, like vaccine requirements. And that is actually something that Scalia wrote into his opinion. He says, any society adopting such a system would be courting anarchy. But the danger increases in direct proportion to society's diversity of religious beliefs and its determination to coerce and suppress none of them. That is correct. Automatic exemptions for every believer are untenable, especially in this country where we have such religious diversity. And this is the point that Scalia goes on to make, precisely because we're a cosmopolitan nation made up of almost every conceivable religious preference, he says, quoting another justice. Precisely because we protect that divergence, we can't afford the luxury of giving every religious objector their own law. And then he goes on to list some cases, case law, precedent, other decisions where the automatic exemption for any religious objection were rejected. Right? You don't get an automatic exemption in these cases. And he listed paying taxes, manslaughter, child neglect, traffic laws, minimum wage laws, child labor laws, environmental protection laws, laws for providing equal opportunity. And he even included in that list compulsory vaccination laws. He included that as an obvious and clear instance in which religion gets no exemption. And the fact that this is now the norm, that the most conservative justice in American history disagrees with the 5-6, it depends on how you want to count Roberts on this one, because he was against these exemptions for vaccine, for anything related to COVID for a long time. These 5 or 6 conservative justices on the Supreme Court, this shows how much the court has changed, how extreme the ideological shift on this court has been, from not just conservative to ultra-conservative. And Scalia wrote a line in here, and again, for a full breakdown, and I know if you know this case, if you think you know this case, you owe it to yourself to go read my chapter in American Crusade on Employment Division v. Smith before writing me an email or an angry tweet about why I'm wrong. But Scalia summed up his opinion in a line that really could guide and should guide a lot of jurisprudence. To make an individual's obligation to obey such a law contingent upon the law's coincidence with his religious beliefs contradicts both constitutional tradition and common sense. It would make him a law unto himself. That's what he goes on to write. And I'm paraphrasing there. You got to go read it. Parents should not have a right to risk their children's lives. That is not a parental right. And with every right comes responsibilities, duties. And first and foremost, parents have a duty to keep their children safe. And I know that some of them think they are by not getting vaccines. But that goes back to the fact that they have not seen what these diseases do, because we are the victims of our own success. Because vaccines have fucking worked. They have saved countless lives and countless misery. And we are just turning our back on that tradition. We are just, and Donald Trump and RFK Jr. are just putting it through a fucking meat grinder in the name of this stupid political movement. I've been thinking a lot about how we take the government for granted. We all, myself in particular, are quick to criticism when things go wrong, and rightfully so. I'm certainly no apologist for the status quo, and wasn't over the last few years even. But we really are seeing what happens when we take that government for granted. I mean, I think the vaccines are a perfect example, as Melinda Gates explained. I think Social Security is another good example. Before Social Security, seniors in America lived in grinding poverty and died earlier. The statistics on this, and there are many out there, are mind-blowing. Church-state separation is another example. And in all of these, we're also not just taking these things for granted, but we're taking them for granted because we are the victims of our own success. Again, the success of vaccines mean we don't see people debilitated and crippled from polio. We don't see children die of the measles. We've been so successful that people don't see the value of vaccines because the value is in that you get to live a healthy life. The value is invisible. But now children are dying again. Social Security completely reimagined aging in this country. You can age and retire and survive in relative comfort rather than dying in penury. Church and state. Well, we've never really done it the way we're meant to, but it's always those who want to impose their religion on all of us who are working to tear it down. We really ought to stop taking these things for granted. Separation of church and state in particular would help us combat the anti-vax movement. Before we close, I want to say two other things. I want to talk a little bit about the Taylor Lorenz Wired story about progressive content creators on social media who are getting paid to produce content as if this were some kind of a nefarious plan. And I just do not get this at all. This is just a non-story. The story of the 2024 election is a story of how we do not live in a shared reality anymore. And how especially conservative Americans live in these insulated bubbles through which facts and reality and communicable diseases cannot penetrate. But it's not just conservative Americans. I mean, they are just bathed in their conservative media streams. It is wallpaper for so many of the people in this country. From Fox News to far worse. Fox News is the, on the liberal side of the spectrum of what they consume. And all of those outlets have gamed the social media algorithms with the backing of billionaires. I mean, if you ever went and looked at the top 10 stories on Facebook every single day in the lead up to, 2022, 2023, 2024, it was all deeply conservative, extreme creators. Dan Bongino, Ben Shapiro. And I want you all to know that I just blanked on Ben Shapiro's name, and for like at least a minute or two, I could not remember it. I actually had to Google it, and it was a glorious minute or two. And I really wish I could recapture not being able to remember who the fuck Ben Shapiro was. That was lovely. I'm so sorry it didn't last. But you have all these deeply conservative creators, Daily Wire, Dan Bongino, Ben Shapiro, all, just to name some, that are capturing the algorithm and pushing that stuff out there and then bringing more people in to their ecosystems as a result of being able to tap that algorithm, which includes several things. It includes working to enrage people who see the post, but it also includes a ton of funding. And they've created these entire ecosystems where they get people to talk about the same issue in the way that they are, which then lifts up their already well-performing content. They're gaming the system, and they've been doing it well for decades. And this is a story, this Wired story is about progressive movement trying to play a little bit of catch up on with a budget that is orders of magnitude smaller. And this is like some gotcha. It is the dumbest thing that I have seen online in a long while. And the idea that we can't do one experiment about this without hand-wringing and pearl-clutching is, I'll just say it's disheartening. And lastly, I want to share a story with you, a little bit more good news. I was going to do this last week, but I hadn't finished reading the opinion because of one thing or another. And it was a really great opinion. It was really fun to read opinion. But in Texas, the district court that was handling the Ten Commandments case, this is the case that Americans United for Separation of Church and State, ACLU, ACLU of Texas, and FFRF are challenging the law that requires the Ten Commandments to be posted in every public school. The judge in that case said, yeah, you can't do that, Texas. That is wrong. And the judge had a lot of fun writing this opinion. And the first section break has a title in the beginning, right? Quoting Genesis 1:1. And this spans the entire breadth of human history and human evolution. Some pointed examples are used. Imagine a Muslim community like Hamtramck wanting to post the teachings of the Quran. What would you say to that, Texas legislators? Section 2. Eternity is a long time. The diversity of Homo sapiens' religious and life after death beliefs. It begins, though most of the 8 billion Homo sapiens have no knowledge that they're traveling 66,000 miles per hour around the sun, they have evolved over several million years to be the only species which knows it will die. Not wanting their existence to end, Homo sapiens developed a multitude of theories and hopes encompassed in thousands of religions of how they can avoid returning to the earth from whence they and other species. I mean, he quotes a Kenny Chesney song. Yes, the country artist, Kenny Chesney, the country singer. On the other hand, some Homo sapiens, known as atheists, believe they know the only truth, that there is nothingness after physical death. I mean, I take exception to that. It's not right. That's not what atheists really claim. But it's just a little snotty, but fine. And then he tries to say, and then those called agnostics do not claim to know what happens after the final breath is expelled, which is really what atheists also claim. It's just that because we don't know that, we're willing to say, you know, we don't have a belief in something. It's sort of the same reason you don't have evidence for a tooth fairy or a leprechaun, so you say you don't believe in them. He goes on to quote Sonny and Cher, "The Beat Goes On." He talks about the American colonial religious experience. This is heavily footnoted. There is a photograph of, there's a section titled Government and Religion Joining Hands. And he writes, "One picture from the modern era speaks silently and poignantly of the danger of majoritarian government and religion joining hands. And it is Hitler shaking hands with Catholic officials, clergymen, while they are surrounded by Nazis giving the Hitler salute." It is quite striking. There's several pages of quotes. There's a page with a section break that says, "United States has no king, the people are sovereign." I would encourage you all to read it. The link is in the show notes. It's 55 pages. You could skip a good chunk of the stuff on the plaintiffs if you want, though I think these brave people deserve to have their stories told. And then he ends by saying, look, here are some other things the Texas legislature could have required people to put up. 1, multiple versions of lessons of behavior from many cultures melded into the American motto of E Pluribus Unum, a concept currently in decline. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you, be kind, be respectful, or... 3, all I really needed to know I learned in kindergarten. Share everything, play fair, don't hit people, clean up your own mess, don't take things that aren't yours, say you're sorry when you hurt somebody, live a balanced life. When you go out into the world, hold hands and stick together. He ends with this, for those who disagree with the court's decision, and who would do so with threats, vulgarities, and violence. Grace and peace unto you. May humankind of all faiths, beliefs, and non-beliefs be reconciled to one another. Amen. So, it's worth reading. And of course, there are things I don't agree with in it, which is, if you know me, so typical of anything I read, especially an opinion. But the outcome is fantastic. They are enjoined from displaying the Ten Commandments as required by the Texas law, which is the outcome we all hoped for. I do have a little bit of a fear that, especially that picture, is going to cause some judges on the Fifth Circuit. And in fact, if I were a betting man, I would bet on this, at least some of these judges declaring that the judge himself was hostile to religion. But can't live in that kind of fear, and you have to cross that bridge when you get there. Until next time, my friends, life is too good to waste on bad ideas. This has been One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew Seidel. Until next time.
KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.